Blog Talk Radio.
So this week I decided to start on time. So we are back in. My internet was happy enough to was nice enough to work. So I am sitting probably for the last time outside hosting, co-hosting the Seth and Sean show with Mr. Palmer. And actually, I don't know if you heard this, unconfirmed reports, Robin Williams killed himself.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't hear what you said.
I said Robin Williams may have, according to San Francisco Bay Area News, Robin Williams found dead due to suicide.
Oh. Holy cow. No, I had not heard that. Looking it up right now, actually, on CNN. So, unconfirmed, obviously.
No, it's actually
nothing
now been confirmed.
Oh.
Ew.
Yeah. Okay, that's bad way to go on the start. I mean, we had a lot to talk about today, including another death that happened, but this one happened in the sporting world. But, wow, that's really, really sad. He died this morning at 63. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, obviously,
yeah,
he's had some problems over the years. But, yeah, kind of a shocking start to the to our show. Well, obviously to our show, but a shocking start in general. Obviously, one of the best comedians of the last 30 years. And, you know, great movies, Good Morning Vietnam. I have certain friends who say Death to some Smoochie, although I could probably kind of pass on that one. It's one of the greatest stand-ups of our generation, or I guess a generation more before us than anything else. But currently, yep, and now it's starting to pop up on all Facebook. So, kind of a morose way to start our show.
Yeah. Our hearts and prayers are with those family of Robin Williams. Definitely a sad way to start the show. That comes on the heels of another death in the sporting world, which I know we're not the biggest NASCAR people. I know you more than me have taken in a race here and there. I have never seen a race. It's actually one of the things on my things-to-do list that I'd like to go to a NASCAR race. Maybe not partake in the Bud Light or the Bud or whatever is being served in the racetrack, but certainly.
No, they smoke the Bud. They drink the Bud Light.
All right, fair enough. But a death on the racetrack this past weekend.
Yeah.
Tony Stewart.
And apparently Stewart had been criticized for even running these kind of races. This isn't NASCAR. This isn't IndyCar. It's kind of dirt track. And I am not an expert on it. So, but
last year during one of these races, he broke his leg. So he was criticized in the fact that this was just something that he shouldn't be doing, but that would be kind of like saying to Kevin Durant, don't go play at Rucker Park. I mean,
yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. Don't play in these exhibitions. If this is what you love to do, if this is what a person loves to do, and that's what Tony Stewart says, this is what I love to do, I don't have a problem with him doing it. I really don't. I mean,
no, I don't either. But, you know, these guys, you know, this is their livelihood. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And, he's not doing that really for the money. He's doing that for the love of racing. The money is, you know, Tony Stewart has made millions and millions and millions of dollars as a racer, you know, Winston Cup champion, he's run sprint, he's run Indy. Oh, actually, I don't think he's run Indy, but he's been one of the top NASCAR racers for the last decade, really kind of rebuilt his image after kind of being thought of not in the most positive capacity early in his career. And this whole thing was strange. I'm not sure if you saw the video. It's pretty brutal.
I actually did. I went and saw the video. So what happened was the racer, and I don't remember the man's name, Kevin Ward. So he rubbed with Tony Stewart, or Tony Stewart crashed into, I mean, rubbing's racing, right? I mean, cars get nicked all the time. But Ward felt that Stewart hit him, put him into the wall, crashed him up, and Ward got out of his car. And we've seen this. I mean, Jimmy Johnson's done it. Danica Patrick's done it. I mean, the majority of the race car drivers get out of their cars. So he got out of his car, and he went down and pointed at Tony Stewart as cars are going by him at 200 miles an hour, 180 miles. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's
almost as fast. Sean, having driven with you for a week, I can say almost as fast as you drive.
Hey, but I get you there. I definitely get you there. But the fact is, definitely fast cars, and he didn't take any precautions, and not to say that you probably could, but he started pointing at Tony Stewart, and some car nearly hit him, and then Stewart hit him. I won't say willfully. There have been no reports that this was willful. I mean, that would be ridiculous. And the concept that he's been cleared of all charges by the prosecutor in the county, but he got hit by the car, it got dragged under the car, and flopped up, and he was pronounced dead. I mean, a sad state of affairs, but it kind of makes you wonder, what the heck are NASCAR drivers or any driver thinking? You get into a wreck, you don't come out, and you don't, I mean, is the opposite thinking, well, if I stay in my car, I'm more likely to get hit there? I don't know. I mean, I've never driven NASCAR, and as much as that says I drive fast, I don't drive nearly as fast as those people.
No. It will bring up the idea of, you know, should drivers be allowed to come out of their car unless it's in an emergency, obviously fire, car breaking down, whatever it is on the road. And it's probably neither your nor my place. We're not big enough fans. We're not experts on NASCAR. I did attend an event a couple of years ago with some friends down in Wilmington, Delaware, which was a blast, which I would go to again. And I do kind of like how they've changed the chase format up to a certain point. I think they've made it a little bit more interesting. But it's certainly not something that on a daily basis I am checking up on and reading up on. It's more of an ancillary sport. And I think in a lot of the Northeast it is. Its following obviously has grown exponentially over the last couple decades, but it's kind of stagnated, I think, over the last few years. I mean, remember, 3, 4, 5 years ago, it was really the big expanding sport in the U.S.
Well, but it's part of that, Seth, the fact that things like this happen. I mean, do you stagnate because there are more deaths in NASCAR than there are any other sport? I think we can safely say that. If you consider NASCAR a sport.
Well,
I can't,
that wasn't really where I was going with it.
But I don't know any other sport where people die. Maybe boxing, MMA, but I mean.
But again, at the professional level, yes, probably there's probably more deaths in car racing than anywhere else. But when you have high school football, where you have these from time to time, in wrestling, in MMA, you know, the backyard wrestling, backyard MMA, you know, that's a little bit different. You know, there are deaths there. I think in a professional capacity, there's probably nothing bigger. There's probably the highest level, the highest amount of death has been through car driving. And
you have a mortality rate, and then you have spectators that get hurt from flying debris. And I'm not saying this happens all the time, but it has been known to happen. And I think people, while they'd like to see a crash, I mean, you're on the side of the road, you like to see everybody rubbernecks because they want to see the crash. They don't want to see anybody dead out of it.
Of course.
So I mean, I think that kind of inhibits the fandom and the concept of growth, because if there are more fatalities, people tend to shy away from those types of sports, and parents don't want their kids watching sports where people die. I don't see it any more clearer than that.
Yeah, but again, it's a different mentality for people who are going into the NASCAR world or into the car racing world than people going into the basketball, baseball, football world. You know, you're not going to find it, it's almost kind of embedded in you from birth. I kind of get the feeling. As opposed to playing football or playing basketball, where you play it because you love playing it, but it's not embedded in you, for lack of a better term.
Okay. I can certainly see that point. So from the fatalities to the Hall of Fame, I mean, I think this is where we have to go next. So this past weekend, the NBA had their Hall of Fame inductions. Jarunas Marsalonis, your favorite player, Mitch Richmond, Alonzo Mourning, David Stern, all inducted into the Basketball Hall. I know you said this before, but it begs the question again. Is the Basketball Hall of Fame a hall of good? Because I don't see any of those guys as top 50 guys. I mean, Marsalonis is more of an international guy, and I get that. And that's probably why Ginobili's going to make it. And that's why Paul Gasol is going to make it. I mean, they have international experience. But when I think of Mourning, I don't think of Mourning as at any point a top five player in the NBA, at any point in his career. When I think of Mitch Richmond, I don't think of – what's that?
Continue. I'll respond when you're done.
And I don't think Richmond was a top five player in the NBA at any point either. Maybe not – maybe even both of them, and I know this is probably stretching it, but maybe not even the top 10 player overall. So if you're not a top 10 player at any point during your career, how are you a Hall of Famer?
Doesn't this sound like my argument?
It's
the Hall of Great versus the Hall of Very Good. Yeah. It was funny. Mitch, as some of you guys know, or some of my friends, I guess, who listen to the show know, my three favorite players of all time are Dr. J, Clyde Drexler, and Mitch Richmond. And Richmond, I'm surprised. I'm surprised he got in, I believe, pretty early in the first ballot, second ballot, first. It hasn't been a long way for him either. One of the issues with Richmond is it's kind of hard to gauge him because he played on such horrible teams that there, and it, I realize it's kind of contradictory to a lot of my argument that to be, you know, an all-star, you should be, or to be an MVP, you should be competing for something. And Richmond was really never competing for something after they broke up TMC when he played with Golden State, being traded, you know, playing with Tim Hardaway, playing with Chris Mullin, being traded for Billy Owens, not one of Golden State's better trades. Michael Jordan said he was the toughest player he played against, which actually shocked me. And apparently he was more heavily respected, more highly regarded within the NBA community and within the NBA players and coaches than he was outside of it. Part of that was because he played on the West Coast, so his games weren't as televised, and part of it was because he played in Sacramento, where his teams were brutal, brutally bad. I am surprised he got in. I'm happy he got in. He's one of my favorite players. Does he deserve it? Nah, I don't see it. But what am I going to do? Alonzo, I think, is a little different. Alonzo, at one point, was the second-best center in the NBA. Behind Shaq. He was the leader of that Miami Heat team for many years. He did some things that were not great. Pretty much he kind of begged the refusal to go to Toronto. There were some issues with that, if I remember correctly. But more importantly, I mean, I think a lot of his getting in Well, he also he was an all. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was a 7 or 8 time All Star. I've got to imagine. Which, you know, while the centers in the East were not exactly the point guards in the NBA now, still a pretty impressive feat. What he did, you know, for charity after his kidney issues and coming back and really leading the Heat to, you know, I mean, those Heat teams were probably the best teams not to make the finals in during that period of time, led again by him and Tim Hardaway. He's never a top 5 player in the NBA, top 10 maybe for a year or two. I thought he would get in. I'm more surprised that Richmond got in that morning did.
Yeah, I understand your point. I am never, ever going to be a all-star selection means Hall of Fame guy. Ever. Because it's based on fan balloting. Derek Jeter did not deserve to be in the All-Star game this year. I don't think anybody in the world can dispute that. Other than the fact that he was Derek Jeter, right? So he should make the All-Star team. Cal Ripken shouldn't have made the All-Star team the last 2 years he was in. So I understand the point that All-Stars are supposed to be the best in the sport, but that's not necessarily the truth. So All-Star arguments don't convince me whatsoever. If you want to go all pro for football instead of Pro Bowl, sure, that convinces me because that's a select number of people. It's not based on the fans. It's not a popularity contest. So looking at next year's and David Stern, so what is your feeling on commissioners being in the NBA, being in the Hall of Fame? Because the NFL changed their Hall of Fame requirements as well. And we can get into that in a second. But they added a contributor concept as well, which would probably grease the wheels for Paul Tagliabue making the Hall of Fame as well. So what are your opinions on commissioners making the Hall of Fame?
My opinion is similar to anybody else. If a commissioner did something, you know, was contributory in a really magnificent capacity, then I have no issue with it. Lawrence O'Brien does not belong in the Basketball Hall of Fame. Bowie Kuhn belongs nowhere near the Baseball Hall of Fame. Pete Rozelle belongs in the NFL Hall of Fame. David Stern, who brought an NBA that was lacking in every capacity, far behind baseball and football in the popularity scheme, made it the biggest global sport in the world with the potential exception of soccer. Or at least while he may not have done it single-handedly, it was the beneficiary of having Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan, now and Iverson and Shaquille O'Neal, you know, really charismatic stars. He was in part responsible for the growth of the NBA. So I don't have I'm a little surprised that you don't have to wait the customary 5 years. Although I guess that surprises me. But I'm not shocked he made it. I would think he would. I think he was relatively deserving of the fact.
Okay. So next year's Hall of Fame for the NBA is a little bit lacking. First-time contestants or considerations are Dikembe Mutombo, who I believe should get in.
Wait, you believe Dikembe Mutombo should get in, but you believe Mutombo was a better player than Alonzo Mourning?
Yes. I think Dikembe Mutombo basically revolutionized defensive play for the center position in the 80s. In the 90s, excuse me.
I'm sorry.
He was the best defensive player in the NBA for a good 5 years, at least.
He's averaged probably 8 to 9 points a game, you're kind of making a Dennis Rodman argument.
I am. I'm absolutely making a Dennis Rodman argument. He was 4-time defensive player of the year. I mean, I don't think that there are very many, if any, players that are more than 4 times. I am absolutely making the Dennis Rodman argument, no question. So, I can see how some people would say he only did one thing well, Well, probably two, being rebounding and blocking shots and being playing a defensive game, but that's my argument. I think he gets in. I think he gets in more because the rest of this first year of Cavs sticks. I mean, do you believe Mutombo should get in or does get in?
No.
No and no.
No, I can see your argument. I don't see him. Again, he's a hall of very good to me, not a hall
okay.
of great. I okay. think there are better players. I guess it's an interesting. I don't see him as a Hall of Famer. I think he's a very good player, but I don't consider him a great player. And
okay.
I do think at points in Mourning's career he was great. So I can see the argument. To me, Mourning. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. So you could see where Mourning would be a higher class.
Yeah. Mourning had a higher okay. ceiling, a better scorer, comparable defensive player, comparable, not as good, but in the ballpark. Mourning was in all second team, all third team NBA center for many, many years. I think was probably first team once or twice as well. To me, Mourning was a better player.
Okay. That's it. So the rest of the rookie class, Bruce Bowen?
Yeah, I'll pass.
Brent Barry?
He can dunk real well.
That's what I was going to say. Bobby Jackson?
Is that Michael's brother?
Yes. The long-lost brother. Matt Harping?
Yeah, that's
Mark
not good
Madsen.
Either.
And Mark Madsen. Those are your... That's
well,
your
Mark Madsen may make the Basketball Dancing Hall of Fame.
And some of the yet-to-be-inducted, but to be considered, Tim Hardaway?
Tough call. I don't think so.
Chris Webber?
To go back to Webber's numbers... I think Weber gets in because Weber will get in also in part because of Michigan.
Yeah.
Because, he is going to be the only representative of the Fab Five, which did revolutionize college basketball in the beginning, in the early 90s.
Wait, does he actually get detracted because of his thing at Michigan, though?
No, I don't think they care. I don't think that's going to keep
okay.
him out. From an NBA, he's a strange case because he's a borderline Hall of Fame player that just should have been better and just wasn't. Kind of how, there's a bunch, there are other players like that. Without having their numbers open, because it looks like my internet just went down, although the radio show is still going, my gut is he gets in. I really don't know if he should. And I'd have to – okay, I'm back up.
How about Penny Hardaway?
Oof. I don't think – again,
I'd
have to look through the numbers. I don't think he gets
in.
I don't think he gets in.
I don't think – yeah, I don't think he had a long enough career. I really don't.
Yeah.
And unlike Grant Hill, he doesn't have the college career to go with it.
Right.
Spencer Haywood.
Haywood should have – I don't know enough. I'll be honest. I'd have to research it a little bit more.
And how about Robert Horry?
No.
Big shot, Rob. You mean six rings doesn't get you in?
No.
I'm with you.
No.
All right, so let's switch over because the NFL changed their criteria. They were figuring, we can't get contributors in because the contributors are going against the players. So we're allowing four players in, six players in. For the next couple of years, we're going to do two veterans and one contributor, and then we'll do one veteran and two contributors. So one of the main contributors, or actually two of the main contributors, that are coming up for election, one will be Paul Tagliabue, and the other one will be Art Modell. What are your thoughts on those two?
I cannot imagine Art Modell going to the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure what revolutionary thing he did from a contributory standpoint to deserve it. I don't really think of Paul Tagliabue as a Hall of Famer, because I don't really think, not sure what he did really to deserve it. I don't see it. I think Tagliabue has a better chance of getting in because Modell is hated in certain areas, and personal preference does come into play here. What do you think?
And I agree with you. I agree with you on Tagliabue too. In fact, the strong consensus is that Tagliabue basically buttoned up a labor agreement 4 years before he left, or I'm sorry, the year, 2 years before he left, knowing that there would be a huge dispute in the next one. Like he gave everybody an out, so he could run off into the sunset and say that there was labor peace. So that big strike that we had was all because Paul Tagliabue didn't want to bear down and deal with it. So
yeah, that sounds about right.
So that may be working incredibly against him. So that's where I'm going with that. So I did have there was another big thing that came down on Friday. I'm not sure if you've heard about the Ed O'Bannon.
I did, as our legal analyst, I will allow you to elaborate.
I knew this was going to come back to me. So basically, what the Ed O'Bannon case said was that players can now have up to $5,000. They can get paid up to $5,000 put in a trust fund for when they graduate for their likeness. So each player may get up to $5,000, and it will revolutionize college sports because now out of that $6.1 billion pie, you now pay athletes if their likenesses are used or if their jerseys are being sold or for whatever reason that their name is being used. And that's going to bring about a lot of problems when it comes to Title IX, because women athletes are not used remotely close to the same way that men athletes are. What's the word I want to use? Not exposed, but maybe what's the word I want to use? That they're used way too often and not compensated enough. Oh well.
So what happens from here?
Well, you know that the decision is going to be appealed, and we'll see what happens for there. The first group of players that can benefit from this are not this year's players, but next year's players. So those that come in 2000, I believe it's those that come in actually in 2016. So there's a two-year window in which schools can prepare for this. So, yeah. So Johnny Manziel would have come out of college with $10,000.
No, $10,000.
Basically the amount that he rolled up in that elevator.
But there are other lawsuits, I believe, in addition. The O'Bannon was the initial one. But I believe there are other lawsuits. Now, is this lawsuit left open opportunities for more – I don't want to say for larger penalties, as penalties is not the right word, but for athletes to receive even more. Compensation, yeah.
Well, the EA Sports lawsuit was already decided. That was already settled. The Sam Keller lawsuit out of Arizona is still going on, and that may prove to be something entirely different. But this will be appealed, and we'll see what arises out of it, but it certainly is something to watch because now you're going to see the haves and the have-nots. Remember, it's not only the Syracuse's and the Syracuse's and the Maryland's that have to pay this. This is everybody pay this. So the question is, do we go that route? I mean, it's definitely an interesting way of thinking going on right now.
One of the things we didn't get to discuss last week, or we didn't discuss too much. Well, actually, we did, but we didn't really discuss, I guess, the ramifications. We did talk about Paul George, kind of skipping around a little bit. If anyone wants to call into the show, 760-283-0846. But, and I've been told to repeat it, 760-283-0846. With Paul George out probably for the year due to the injury. We now, not surprisingly, 4 days later, Kevin Durant decides to withdraw from the U.S. team. Considering what a job Jerry Colangelo and Mike Krzyzewski have done building this into something really, rebuilding this into something that people wanted to do, is this the first step? Kind of the first back step in this? Is this going to be, are players, do you think, going to start to withdraw? And what is the long, do you think there, I guess the better question is, do you think there's a long-term impact for the U.S. Olympic team based on what happened to Paul George?
Well, I think there'll be a long-term impact, but I think it'll depend on, it'll be on a situational basis. And it really depends on, does Kevin Durant and LeBron James, if LeBron is thinking about playing, pull out of the Olympics? Because people have pulled out of these types of tournaments often, right? I mean, LeBron's not playing in this. Carmelo's not playing this. They both want to play in the Olympics in, what is it, 2016, right? So they're still on the roster. So when 2016 comes up, if Carmelo or LeBron say, yes, we want to play, Jerry Colangelo is not going to say, oh, no, you can't play because you didn't play in the FIBA World Championships in 2014. That's not going to happen. But if people start pulling out of the Olympics, that's when the trend will start. I think you might see some bigger names pulling out of these smaller tournaments. I mean, you saw Kevin Love pull out, right? He pulled out for reasons that he didn't want to get injured because he's got a free agent year coming up. And people have pulled out similarly for those same reasons in the past. So I think if there is a reason, I think that may be it. Do you believe Kevin Durant when he says there's really no reason not to believe him. Do you think it's just too coincidental at this point?
I think it was the impetus to get it done. The man has played so much basketball in the last couple of years, and for all intents and purposes, while not single-handedly carrying that team, he did that at points. And his supporting cast, obviously led by Russell Westbrook, who's been injured a lot of 2 years ago. He wasn't back at 100% for part of the year this year. He's plays in the summer. He really has not had some time off, and I actually find it legitimate. Now, the question isn't going to be the LeBron James and the Kevin Durant. The question is going to be more of the second-tier superstars who are going to do it and what the ramifications are for them with the Olympics. A Blake Griffin, a LaMarcus Aldridge, players like that, the Kevin Love. Now, most likely, some of these players who would have had a better chance to make the team based on playing in 14 now are not going to have that opportunity. That may lessen their chances for the Olympics. You know, you have the three
That's
or four
right.
automatics. You have, to me, if he wants to play Chris Paul, if he wants to play LeBron James, if he wants to play Kevin Durant, and actually even wants to play, I think Stephen Curry would be the four automatics. And
no,
I may be missing one.
Believe it or not, Seth, I think Carmelo is an automatic at this point.
Carmelo probably would be too. He's a great
his international play
has been stellar. Those would be the five. I actually think Curry's game is just beautiful for the international game. But when you have four other point guards, and well, point guard is probably not the best position to talk about. When you have the power forwards, and what are we looking at a power forward right now? Well, you can have LeBron play the power forward. You can have Durant play the power forward. You're going to probably want one or two other big ones. And the three biggest names, Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, LaMarcus Aldridge, are all out. And yep. Especially Aldridge, who doesn't really get the publicity of the other two. It may have been a place for him to really, and Carmelo actually as a stretch four as well. It may have given him an opportunity yep. to step in there where it wouldn't have been feasible, where it may lower his chances for 2016.
I agree. And Aldridge actually backed out first. Of all
yes.
these players, Aldridge is the one that backed out first. And the irony is, if he hadn't backed out at all, he'd probably be the main focus of this offense right now. I mean,
yeah,
he'd be
very well could
Kirk.
Be. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like the U.S. is hurting for scoring. It's not like they're hurting for players. I mean, they're still top to bottom, probably the top 15 players in the championships, if you take it as a team. But they have lost a go-to guy. I don't think they have that. Unless Krzyzewski says, we're just going to run these guys out of the court, which I think has to be their philosophy right now. I mean, point guard is certainly, you got Curry, you got Lillard. They cut John Wall. I mean, the guard play is unbelievably fast for them. But they don't have any upfront scoring, and it's very hard to see them matching up with the Gasol brothers in Spain.
Well, that was prior to all the pullouts and to George and to Durant, there was talk. Miles Mason, I got the wrong Plumlee had a legitimate shot to make this team over a DeMarcus Cousins or Andre Drummond. Now, with a potential need for real down-low scoring, I think Plumlee's Plumlee plays for Brooklyn. He's a nice player. He's not DeMarcus Cousins. He's not Andre Drummond. You know, he's a nice backup forward. But
well, I think it's possible for all three of them to make it now. I mean, I think it's definitely possible for all three of them to make it now. I mean, Rudy Gay just came aboard. So, I'm going to look up the roster now. FIBA World Championship World Cup. But, I mean, it's certainly possible for the three of them to make it at this point.
I have to look up the rest of the team. But the other question is how many guards are they going to keep? I mean, when I look at that team, you have Curry as your base point guard. I'm forgetting the second one who's there. It's not Westbrook, right? He's not.
No, it's Lillard.
Or is it Westbrook? Lillard, Irving, and there's a fourth one, I thought. And
no, Wall got cut.
Okay, I thought there was somebody else. They cut Beal also. And John Wall is not seeming too happy. Not sounding very happy about it. But and again, to me, I would take. You know, when you coach Duke, and you're accustomed and you just know Kyrie Irving's game and you know Mason Plumlee's game, to me, I would take a John Wall over a Kyrie Irving. That's my view. It looks like it'll be the weakest team they've had since 2014 that I believe got to third place. This will not be a great world championship team this summer.
No, I completely agree with that. I mean, I'm looking up the rest of the roster at this point, seeing where we are. But, John Wall getting taken off so quickly, he was certainly not happy about it whatsoever. Oh, you have James Harden. So Stephen Curry, James Harden, that's two. Anthony Davis, three. Does Fareed make it? Chandler Parsons. Oh, the point guards are Curry, Lillard, Irving, and Derrick Rose.
Oh, that Derrick Rose is who I forgot. So you're not going to I mean, are you really going to keep four point guards? It's I find that a little bit.
Know.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they did it, but I find it a little bit surprising. It's just not. You just don't need four point guards.
I agree.
I mean, the other unless the thought is you can move Curry to the two.
Yeah, at this point, they just brought in Rudy Gay. Do you think they bring in Rudy Gay to cut Rudy Gay? I'm thinking probably not.
No, my assumption is Gay makes the team. He played with them. I don't think he made it to the 2012 Olympic team, but he may have made the 2010 World University team. Or whatever it was, 2012 World Championships.
Let's say they pick one out of the three out of the four guards. Which one's gone?
Which one do I keep, or which one do I think is gone?
Both.
Cut Kyrie Irving. I think they cut Damian Lillard.
I would agree with both. Okay, so now we have the swing man, right? So you got Chandler
right.
Parsons, Klay Thompson, Gordon Hayward, DeMar DeRozan, and Kyle Korver. They're probably competing for three spots. Okay? Who are you cutting? So you got Parsons, Thompson, Hayward, DeRozan, and Korver. Five guys, three spots. Which are you cutting?
You're cutting one of – you're cutting either Korver or Hayward. You're not keeping both of them. Between the other three, you're keeping Thompson – who's DeRozan and who's the other one I'm missing? Oh, Harden.
Right.
They're not cutting Harden.
Parsons.
Oh, Parsons. Okay, so it's that swing.
I think Parsons is a guaranteed lock at this point.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think he's an absolute lock. He's Paul George a step lower, but he plays the same way. He's a good defender. He's a good outside shooter. He's 6'10".
Parsons is 6'10"?
I believe Parsons is 6'10". Bill, look that up right now, but I believe he's 6'10", maybe 6'9". He's 6'9". So Parsons is 6'9". Basically, he's a carbon copy of Paul George. I mean, I think he's better than DeRozan. He can play the four, which DeRozan certainly cannot, in the international game. None of those guys on that list, Thompson, Hayward, DeRozan, or Korver, can play the four. Can we accept that?
Yeah, but I'm not sure how much Korver can play the four either.
No, I said Parsons can play the four.
I'm not sure that Parsons can really play the four. I guess a stretch four, I guess he can.
Remember,
I don't see Parsons
as
a four. Yeah.
But this is the international four. This is the four that Kevin Durant could play.
I understand.
Right? So I think Parsons is a lock because I don't think any of those other guys can bring what Parsons does in playing the four.
Okay.
So that's why I put him as a lock. I don't think Hayward makes the team. I think Hayward's game is too redundant with everybody else. And I also don't think – oh, and by the way, you have Rudy Gay in this mix, too. So it's probably three out of six.
Then I think they keep Gay. I think they keep Korver. And
– I think they keep Thompson, and they ditch DeRozan and Hayward.
Oh, okay. Gay, Korver, and Thompson. Those would be the three that I think they keep. I cannot imagine they bring in Gay to cut him. Korver has one specialty. He does it better than just about anybody in the world.
Yep.
And who's the third? Crap. Who am I forgetting? Who's the third one? Oh, Klay Thompson. Everyone seems to be exceptionally high on. And you know, the problem is I'm not sure how well his game, because he cannot create his own shot particularly well. Again, good defender, good athlete, good shooter. I think those are the three that make it. So right
so
now we have. I'm keeping Korver. Korver, Gay.
Who are you ditching? Korver, Gay, and Thompson? So you're ditching Parsons?
Yes.
Okay. So now you're on to your – so how many guys do we have so far? We got three and then six, right?
No, we also have James Harden. So we have seven.
Seven. Okay, so there are three centers. There's Cousins, Drummond, and Plumlee. So you're ditching Plumlee.
Also Anthony Davis.
And Anthony,
are you
right,
putting
Anthony
him
at Davis? Okay.
Davis is the starter. So.
And you also got Fareed. You also got Kenneth Fareed.
Yeah. So right now, off the top of my head, and I'm actually not researching this right now, I don't know if Drummond makes it. I know Davis makes it. I think Cousins makes it. There will be a third center. I can't believe Mason Plumlee has a legitimate shot to make this team. I find that really almost laughable. But I don't think Drummond makes it. You know, what I've been reading is they have not been overwhelmed with Drummond. So I think you're looking at. I really don't know. I can't justify taking Plumlee over Fareed or Drummond. So I think the only big man you're really cutting is Plumlee. I just can't in my mind justify keeping Plumlee over Drummond or over Fareed. Can't do it.
The only reason I can take him over Drummond, and this is my look. You know I play fantasy sports, right? You know
I've heard that. Yeah.
You've heard a little bit about that, and Andre Drummond last career wise has shot 40% from the free throw line.
Yes, he has.
So how do you play him in a clutch situation? You can't.
I don't think you're going to, but you're not going to play Plumlee in a clutch situation either. You're not going to play any of these third centers in a clutch situation, unless.
But Davis isn't going to play. Davis isn't going to play the five.
I think Davis is going to play the five.
I think that Davis is playing the four.
Oh, I disagree. I completely disagree. I think you're going to have a run-and-gun athletic team. The way you do that is to have Davis starting at the five.
Okay, so your starting lineup right now is what? It's Harden? Who's starting? Curry, Harden, or do you have Rose and Curry? Two of those three, right?
Yeah, two of those three. It could be
tough. Who are you playing at the three? Rudy Gay?
It could very well be Rudy Gay, or it could be Klay Thompson. And
okay, so Klay Thompson plays the three. Who's playing the four for you, Fareed?
No, I don't want Fareed starting. Maybe.
Okay, so.
I'm thinking.
You don't have another four guy.
I know, I'm thinking here, man. Give me a second. I mean, I guess you. Man, this really killed him by doing this. Maybe you play. Can you play Gay at the four? I mean, he's not really a stretch four.
No.
You're not going to start. I'm kind of going through the team right now. You're not going to start Fareed. You're not. DeRozan doesn't make it. Hayward doesn't make it. Korver, you're not going to start. Parsons doesn't make it on my team. Can you start a three guard? Start Rose, Curry, and Harden. And it still leaves you at the same situation. They don't have a legitimate three.
With that lineup, how on God's green earth are you rebounding the ball?
This is why I'm thinking out loud.
For everyone who's listening
and thinking, if I speak hours and hours on this before we do the show, hopefully this kind of proves the point that I don't.
I'm telling you,
They're going to start Davis at the four and Cousins at the five?
Yep. Well, I'm telling you, that's how it's going to be.
That is just ugly. That is really ugly.
Wait, so if you start Davis at the four and Cousins at the five, you start Klay Thompson at the three, Harden at the two, and Curry at the one, you just space the floor. Right?
Yeah, but I'm thinking from a depth perspective. The idea that Mason Plumlee could be in the fourth quarter of a game against Spain, I find it completely terrifying.
Well, I think that's going to happen. I'm telling you that right now. I think you're going to see Mason Plumlee on this team over Andre Drummond, and you're going to see him in the fourth quarter against the Spaniards because they're going to rotate the three big men the entire day. That's what's going to happen. And when you play Plumlee, well, you have two options. You can take out Cousins and move Davis to the five and put Fareed at the four, right? They have three options. They can do that. They can keep Boogie in and put Parsons at the four. I still think Parsons makes this team. I don't think there's a shot that he doesn't. I really think he may be with Curry and Anthony Davis, the biggest three locks on this team right now. I think if Paul George is not hurt, then Parsons doesn't make the team. But I think he's the only guy that can play the three and the four, because Fareed certainly cannot.
No, Fareed cannot.
Rudy Gay probably cannot.
Rudy Gay, it's a stretch.
You're asking for a lot, having him play a stretch four.
Yes.
So, I mean, remember, Rudy Gay is a guy that wants the ball in his hands, too. So, I mean, stretch four is basically a guy like Dirk Nowitzki that stands out there and shoots.
Which
that's
Gay
not Rudy
is not
Gay's
a
game.
No, he can do that. All right, we got about 5 minutes. I want to touch on something quickly before we go to our final.
Sure.
How, you know, when Detroit makes this trade for David Price, you figure they're going to run away with this division at this point. Verlander, Scherzer, Porcello, Price. How in the heck are the Kansas City Royals a half game out of first place in the AL Central?
Well, this is part of, first of all, I'd like to commend you on bringing up a baseball subject, because I certainly don't anticipate that coming very often. Number two, I was going to wait for my 5 minutes, but I'll say it now. It's because of a guy named Soo Wong Kim.
Who, what,
no
where?
Joke. No joke. So a guy named Soo Wong Kim. Let me get the exact name because I may be mispronouncing. Hold on a second. And I know we have 5 minutes left, so I'll just give me 2 seconds to get this name. So basically, this guy has been a lifelong Kansas City Royal fan. No joke.
Oh, this is the Korean. This is the Korean. This is the Korean guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They've won 5 in a row since this guy has come to the U.S. 5 in a row. The Royals are on fire. Oh, it's Sung Woo Lee. I just put the vowels in the wrong place. But he's been a Royals fan for 20 years because he likes underdogs and St. Kauffman Stadium, which I heard is beautiful. He thinks it looks beautiful and wants to use Major League Baseball broadcast to improve his English skills. Hell, why not? So he started blogging and started using blogs and uses the Kansas City Star website for the last 20 years and got a Twitter account. So for 20 years, Kansas City Royal fans have been trying to get this guy to come over to Kansas City, and this summer he decided to do it. So in his first day, in Kansas City, he was greeted by television cameras for 4 local news television casts, was featured in the Kansas City Star, took a tour of the Negro League Baseball Stadium, gets featured in Deadspin in USA Today, has lunch at Arthur Bryant's, is interviewed by the sports radio station, trolls the best fans in baseball, tours the Boulevard Brewing Company that evening, with the Royals still playing in Arizona because they weren't home by then, He gets a shout-out by Danny Duffy, who behind the scenes has a lot to do with the story becoming his big. He was on the Royals pregame show, got an email from Mike Sweeney. That was all on Wednesday. You think we had a long trip? This guy went 6,000 miles to do all that in one day. So,
lazy bum.
The Mets need a couple of fans from Seoul, Korea. That meant maybe we'd win five in a row.
Well, that still doesn't explain exactly how this team has really cut this lead in half. It's a nice story, but what has Kansas City done?
Well, their pitching has come to play. I mean, that's where it is. First of all, they've played
Shields.
Teams like the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are not the best teams in baseball. Kansas City, the Royals had a very good schedule in the second half for them. They had a very hard schedule in the first half, and they're getting good pitching. James Shields, he probably his last year in Kansas City, has done very well for the team. Danny Duffy has come on. Ventura has come on. They've started hitting. Alex Gordon is once again becoming one of the better outfielders. And while Detroit has played 500 ball, their bullpen has blown up. Joe Nathan blew another save. Joaquin Soria went on the DL yesterday along with Anibal Sanchez. They're just not playing well, so we'll see. But we got about 3 minutes to go. You just stole what I wanted to talk about. So you're up for three more minutes.
Well, I'm glad I could give it to you. In what I would consider one of these thought processes, of course, by a college in recent memory, Florida State, in their infinite wisdom, decided to start an Ask Jameis Twitter site. Now, when you're dealing with college kids and college teams, what exactly would you expect to happen when you're asking to talk to a guy who has been criticized for stealing crab legs from a grocery store, for potential sexual assault of a female student? What exactly did you think was going to happen? Did you think, the Florida State people are going to be in favor, are going to love Jameis, and that's great. You know, when the Heisman led the team to a national championship, of course they're going to be supportive. But for the other 100 and, the other 95% who are going to comment and tweet him, what do you think is going to happen? This is stupid. This is a stupid thought process. Florida State should have known better. But again, I guess it is Florida State. So how high could your expectation be? So, and I'm getting an ooh from the crowd. So we're pretty much – that pretty much sums it up for this week. Next week is not going to be live. Sean, I'll fill you in next week. But we got college football preview, NFL preview, fantasy football preview, all coming up in the next few weeks. It should be fun. Sean, your thoughts?
That's it. We should be rocking and rolling next week on our taped show. Somehow I missed the memo, but I'll get it.
You didn't get it. I'll fill you in 2 minutes. For Sean
right,
Palmer.
Talk to you later.
This is Seth Kamens. Have a good night, everybody.
See ya.